Twice a week, Van Lathan and Rachel Lindsay dissect the biggest topics in Black culture, politics, and sports on their show, Higher Learning. They discuss the most important and timely conversations while also frequently inviting guests on the podcast and occasionally debating each other. Check out Higher Learning on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire, you're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
David, what's on your mind this week?
Well, I was watching some football last night, watching some basketball this week, as one does. I guess what I'm thinking about is the fact that NBA is moving off of Thursday nights, which is, you know, one of my favorite basketball nights to watch. They've moved off of Thursday nights so they don't have to compete with NFL Thursday night football, which raises a lot of questions. You know, it's obviously a statement that about the NFL's dominance, right, in the ratings. That you'd be moving off the Thursday night, away from the Thursday night game, which is certainly not the most high-profile game on the calendar for the NFL in the NFL week. But also just that you'd be moving off at all. I mean, I understand not wanting to go head to head. Maybe you shift to a different night, or you go an hour earlier, a couple hours later, or something like that. If it's a ratings battle, but this shouldn't really be a ratings battle, right? Isn't this? I mean, it just seems like a total. It's less of like a waving the white flag, and more of just like a you know, giving up almost. What am I missing here?
Is there a distinction between waving flag and surrendering?
It's less of a like an acknowledgement that you're going to lose, right? So why fight tonight? And more just, I mean, it's not just. It shouldn't be a contest, right? It's a contest for viewers. I mean, it's a contest for viewership so that you can like, so your advertisers want to pay you money, right? But it's not like you lose in a rock fight to football and no one thinks the NBA's got it anymore, right? I mean, there's a certain expectation, and one would think that from an advertiser's or from a network point of view, getting a, you know, 0.9 rating for a Lakers game or something on a Thursday night is better than what you would have had otherwise. So what's the argument here?
It's pretty bracing. It really is to just say like, we're not even going to be the sport for the people who love basketball and don't want to watch football tonight. We don't even think there's a niche there, just to come in, as you said, with a smaller audience, but a cool basketball audience on Thursday night.
Yeah.
And that's just amazing. I mean, it's
not
yeah.
just we don't not just for the people who don't want to watch football, but for the people who want to flip channels during the timeouts. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's like I understand that's not like a you know, a ratings point, right? That's not a discrete demo that you'd want to target channel flippers. But like that, it just seems weird that they would just be running in the opposite direction when there's no like material loss other than them having to acknowledge whatever the rating would be, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I just think it all in a way comes back to the story that you and I have seen our whole lives, which is the networks and then live television have been losing audience, losing audience, losing audience. Football has lost less audience than everything else, has done a better job of maintaining its audience from the three channel days of our youth to now. And I saw this note in Peter King's column today. He was talking about as recently as 2009, the NFL actually didn't play Sunday night football during the World Series. The idea being like, oh my gosh, like if we play a game tonight, people are going to be watching the World Series and that could really hit our ratings. Maybe we should adjust the schedule. Maybe we should kind of sort of indirectly do baseball a solid. And they just decided, you know what? we're going to play Sunday Night Football during the World Series. And last night, it's not just Sunday Night Football going up against Game 5. It's the Dallas Cowboys going up against Game 5.
Mm-hmm.
The ratings magnet that are the Dallas Cowboys. And you're like, in the NFL, just why would the NFL care about that anymore? Why would they care about anything? We are going to have our thing and people are going to watch whatever it is, whatever we put on, even as you say, a somewhat lackluster Thursday night game. And everybody else just has to now literally get out of the way.
I mean, it seems what do I know what I'm talking about? But it doesn't seem like it would be in the days of streaming when all these, you know, terrestrial, I guess terrestrial is not the right word, but all these like just old TV networks are trying to hang on to their audience as best they can. It seems like consistency would be more valuable than anything else, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going for an audience who values tradition, values sameness, right? I mean, like, why would you jump off a date because of a rating? It feels like you risk losing even more in the long run.
Yeah, if we've lost the whole idea of you have to show up Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time to watch your favorite show, like that is kind of out the window in the streaming era, and you can preserve it a little bit by having an NBA game that starts on Turner at this time on Thursday night, why wouldn't you just cling to whatever appointment viewing you have left?
So I'm not going to make a conspiratorial turn here on purpose, but I realize as I'm asking this question, it might just sound like one. The other thing is that like the traditional NBA on TNT crew, you know, Charles and Kenny and Ernie and Shaq are going to be moving from Thursday to Tuesday night while there's only one game a week, leaving the sort of, you know, up and comers over on Tuesday, the Candace Parker, Dwayne Wade, Shaq and Adam Lefkoe crew, I guess, absent a game to be there for. I don't know if they're going to be completely like sitting idle, but they're not, but that's their slot, right? So, I mean, is that significant?
I don't know. You did the good thing where you said, I'm not going to do a conspiracy theory and then just laid out the conspiracy.
Well, you're right. I should have asked it at the top of the segment because it's significant, but I did. But now it's like, I'm framing that as the answer. I don't know. I don't believe that's the answer. I can't imagine if anything else were the answer, they would have done the same thing with the broadcast crews or with the studio crews. But it does seem like, well, that could be an answer.
I think you handled it just exactly like everyone in through history has handled it. I'm not doing a conspiracy theory here, but and then just lay out whatever the intriguing theory is, which is more interesting than the actual truth.
Mm-hmm.
Well done, sir. Well done.
Thank you. You
have a prestigious perch in media for a reason. David, we had not done a listener mail show for a while. So coming up on today's pod, we answer listener questions about announcer trades, the rewriting of January 6th, and who should write the Ben Simmons profile we all want to read? All that and more on the Press Box, a part of the Ringer Podcast Network. Hello, media consumers. Brian Curtis and David Shoemaker here, along with producer Isaiah Blakely. David, let's dive right into listener mail with a tweet from a friend of ours, Ryan Rosillo of the Ringer.
Mm-hmm.
Ask this question. Would you do Scott Van Pelt and a second round pick for Joe Buck?
Oh, man. I'm tempted just to let that lie. It's a perfect question. Would I do Scott Van Pelt and a second round pick for Joe Buck? As a human being? Am I ESPN or Fox in this?
I guess either answer.
I'm Fox. If I'm, I'm a big Scott Van Pelt guy. You know, it's my obligation as a bald glasses wearing tallish fellow to be part of that team. I've always enjoyed him, really enjoy his show. I think that the easy answer would just be to say, I'm going to stick with Van Pelt. The way he's phrased this made it seem like I'm in possession of Van Pelt, especially if I have to give up a pick. But, I mean, we've talked about Joe Buck too many times on this show and acknowledged his sort of sui generis value, right? I mean, he's just such a... He's an icon, and he doesn't seem to be diminishing, and there's a lot of value there. I think for me personally, I would rather have Van Pelt in the second, but I think that it'd probably be hard to explain that to my owner.
Do we know where ESPN is picking in this hypothetical second round? Is this an early round or a late round pick? Because ESPN was having a really crappy year this year.
Yeah.
Remember the whole fake high school thing and the whole Maria Taylor, Rachel Nichols thing. And then they had the Manning cast, though. That was ESPN's best thing in a really, really long time. So maybe they were picking early in the second round. Now they're picking a little later in the second round. I think you should put that into it.
But also, by the way, you hit on a... We never even talk about the fake high school on this show, I don't think, but I like how the fake high school was just like a throwaway line amongst media controversies. That's just amazing stuff. Shows how far we've come.
Also, do we need an announcer trade machine? You know how Bill, whenever he's doing fantasy trades, puts the NBA players into the trade machine to see if the salaries will work?
Mm-hmm.
Do we need one of those that could somehow tell us, well, you know, you're going to lose your SportsCenter guy if you trade away Van Pelt and your golf guy, but you would basically solve every play-by-play problem that ESPN currently has with football and baseball? I don't know.
It's true. Did you have to factor in calling somebody up to that SportsCenter job? Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, and listen, Joe Buck, I'm sure, would be happy to call golf or anything else they put in front of him. But
he did that for Fox, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it's true. There's you would be able to take up a lot of the slack. Why not? What about Joe Buck as your late night SportsCenter anchor, though? Can we just do that?
I think he could do that.
Joe Buck just never leaves the desk. That's how we're gonna do it. In the post COVID era, no one has to travel for games anymore. We're just gonna have a very comfortable chair for Joe Buck in Bristol or wherever he wants to be.
St. Louis, I think, right?
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Have to move?
He can just broadcast from there as frequently as he wants to turn the camera on.
This is from listener Jake Tuber. David, can you share any wisdom about the return on investment calculated by periodicals when they go after a huge long-term story for a single publication? For example, the Washington Post Sunday piece on January 6th. The cost must be enormous. How does a media entity translate the soft benefits of great reporting into profit?
Ooh, that's a good question. Clearly they were, there's an interactive online component. There's the print edition. You can tell that they're working to monetize this and as much as they can. But what is the question? Like, is it just that long that all the resources that it would take to publish something like that are prohibitive compared to just publishing regular content? Is that what we're presupposing?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is kind of an interesting one because it's Trump. You know, it's not like we sent somebody to the Arctic Circle to do the definitive interactive story on global warming.
That's next week. Yeah,
sure. Which they probably have already done too, but this is a Trump interactive story. It's January 6th. It's something that still is very live. Trump is still the head of the Republican Party, as we're reminded with the Virginia governor's race this week. And yeah, so to me, this is kind of an interesting one because it's certainly resource intensive. It's a big project. It takes a long time. You get, a couple of days in our world out of this. But this also just is something that is very, very top of mind and topic A, as opposed to, an outside the box kind of big interactive project.
Well, yes, I can speak from a very personal and self-centered point of view, which is that I feel like especially when we were in our 20s or whatever, when this sort of thing is published, you read it, but you would go out of, even if you're reading it online, you go out of your way to find the physical copy, right? There's just sort of a publishing moment aspect to it. So maybe they make more money off of just hard copy sales, people actually picking it up. That's a thing I need to own, right? It's like the paper from an important day in history or something, but just buying one of those biographies that you're never going to read. It's a thing that you kind of, for some reason, feel driven to own a copy of. So maybe there is some sort of, really direct return on investment there. Maybe that's just, me and you and a couple of other bookstore dwelling eggheads. But it's it is a, I mean, there's obviously a lot of reasons why this story in particular would draw people in. I mean, I think that it's you can make the case that it's like, I mean, easily make the case that this is an incredibly important story that, you know, and this is a definitive account. It might be sort of a model for, you know, print journalism moving forward, to try to identify these things that might have been books in ages past, mm-hmm. you know, and just sort of like shotgun them out into the world. So yeah, you have to like spend a lot of money and a lot of resources fact checking and corroborating and obviously getting every version of it, including multimedia, ready to go as quickly as possible. But you know, I don't think that it's a bad idea at all. I think that especially for an outlet like the Washington Post or the New York Times or someone with the financial resources to do this sort of thing, this could be, you know, in some ways more interesting than and more significant than anything else they would do.
Might have been a book and might have been a documentary, or at least mm-hmm. a TV documentary.
Yeah, might still.
So you're sort of claiming those businesses, and there's going to be books about January 6th, but we're going to do our own multimedia, very easy to read, comprehensive version of it and get it out first. I mean, it's always interesting when we get these little peeks under the hood of how subscription businesses like the New York Times, Washington Post work, and mm-hmm. the kind of stew of elements they wanted to do. I mean, there's stuff like crosswords and recipes and all kinds of things like that. There is the opinion section, especially the New York Times. Remember, we saw that stat about how much of the traffic opinion generates at the New York Times because people just click on things. Mm-hmm. There are scoops, especially scoops about politics over the last couple of years that have been a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you could call this sort of multimedia, but very scoopy, explanatory, sort of like the New York Times thing on Trump's taxes.
Yeah.
You know, just in that sort of zone. And you want to give people enough of that so that, oh, I can't just go cancel my subscription to the Post. I'm going to want to read this when this thing happens every few months or when it does. And that's probably part of their calculus.
Yeah, I mean, I know the calculus in-house has got to be just really heavily give people reasons to not cancel their subscription. But this is also, I mean, if we take a step back from the world where people are canceling subscriptions left and right, and who knows what the Washington Post's trajectory is, I certainly don't off the top of my head. But this feels to me more like a subscription starter. You know, like you see this and you're just like, yeah, that's the sort of place I want to be reading every weekend or every day or whatever else, you know? I mean, it's, I have mm-hmm. a Washington Post login, I accidentally deleted all of my auto login. So I actually had to go back and find it for this yesterday, you know, and that would have been a moment. I mean, this is certainly not one where I'm just going to like skip it and wait till I saw it again after everything I was logged back in. This is one that I had to go read in real time, you know? So I think that it certainly pushes people like that.
Another sports media person has a question for us. This time it's Peter Schrager.
Oh.
Familiar to listeners of The Ringer, watchers of television, Peter writes, as someone on two different studio shows, both of which had fun with it, what is the press box take on studio show Halloween stuff?
First of all, fantastic humble brag. Good Morning Football is like, I've been traveling a lot and Good Morning Football has become my like go-to hotel room morning show.
It's like CNN International used to be, where you just like flip it on and you'd see it in the airport and, oh, we're watching this now. And yeah, it's the new go-to.
I'm not a football fanatic like other people. Some people at The Ringer are. I watch a good bit of football, but like if you would ask me at any point over the past 12 years whether or not I had NFL Network, I probably would have been confused. You know, I'm not quite sure if I know the answer, but now, I mean, I do have it now, I know, but like what an awesome show. And I'm watching it at home, so I don't know. But to the question, because even if I love the show, I wouldn't necessarily defend their costuming. I think it's fine. You know what it is? It's like, I just went trick-or-treating with my kids in Brooklyn, in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. It's where the rest of our sort of modern family lives. So that's where we were. my wife and I spent, you know, the early hours, like 10 to 1-ish, just kind of messing around Brooklyn, doing some stuff. And you see the first trick-or-treaters the people who are on their way to a thing. You start walking through McCarran Park or whatever, and there's just a whole lot of like parents and families gathering. And at the beginning, I have to admit, I'm a little bit dismissive of the heavily costumed parents. Now, I don't mind adults in costumes at nighttime if that's what you're doing. And I certainly don't mind, you know, parents putting on a mask or whatever, just a thing. Or if you're hanging out with your kid wants you to do this. I understand. I would be there doing the same thing. But, you know, sometimes from afar, it's easy to point at like the family that spent a whole lot of money on their Incredibles get-ups or whatever. And you're just like, yeah, whose idea was this really? You know, and so anyway, I shouldn't even say it out loud because I understand it's a sort of irrational snarkiness that hopefully, like, you know, I will age out of sooner rather than later.
You sound like a guy who was like looking at Instagram last night and seeing all the family get-ups mm-hmm. that were clearly done for social media.
I think that's the turnoff, right? It's like, I know that if one of your kids came to you and said, like, whatever, will you please be the cartoon father, you know, the father of the character that I'm being from this Pixar movie, you would just be like, yes, of course, you know, like whatever.
Will you give be me my the cartoon father.
But all of that is to say, when the trick-or-treating actually starts, you're just like, oh, look at all these cute parents. Like, this is really fun. Like, it's nice. It's fun. You're part of a thing. Like, it's everybody's in it together. I kind of wish I had more of a costume on, you know, like we're all there for the kids and it's a lot of fun. I kind of feel the same way about studio hosts dressing up for Halloween. It sounds a little bit like, you know, you want to be a little bit snarky about it in the abstract, you know, but when it actually happens, you're just like, yeah, what? That's cool. That's cool. I understand why they're doing it. And it looks like they're having a good time. So, you know, more power to them.
It was a lot bigger deal, I feel, in the suit and tie era of television, where every time you turned on TV, if it was any kind of studio show, news, sports, whatever it was, everyone was really dressed up.
Mm-hmm.
So then on a Halloween, when they were, you know, Fred Flintstone, you were like, whoa, look at that. But now when you're wearing the half zip on a Monday on your mm-hmm. studio show, and then you're kind of dressed as something, it's not Ted Lasso. I don't know what you're dressed as. It's not really that big of a move.
It's true.
From one to the other. By the way, Peter was dressed as Bum Phillips on Good Morning Football, which is a really excellent costume. Encourage people to look that up online. And let me give you, and by the way, David, this also exists as this weird role. I know when I was looking at Katie Couric, one of those stories the other day about Katie Couric, when we were talking about her, there were pictures of her on the Today Show on the Halloween edition all dressed up. So this just exists in perpetuity in a weird way for television people. It's like, oh, there she is on the set, and there she is dressed as something funny on the set for that one show a year. One more thing to add to this, though. So Peter, that was Good Morning Football. Peter was on Fox, and he was wearing a Christian Okoye jersey, the old Kansas City Chiefs running back.
Of course, I endorse yeah.
Christian Okoye jerseys in any context.
Christian Okoye, by the way, is the real Tecmo Bowl legend, all right? Bo Jackson was faster and gets and all the praise he gets is deserved, but yeah, like the real ones out there know that Christian Okoye was the most fun to play with.
So Peter's dressed as Christian Okoye, and a PA runs out from the back while he's talking, dressed like the killer in Scream with the mask on and the black cloak, and just scares him, like legitimately scares him while he's delivering a football point. And he looked so freaked out on the air. And there was no point to it other than we're just going to run out and scare you like you'd have a jump scare in a movie. So I kind of fully endorse that. We need to see on-air talent frightened more before our eyes.
Oh my gosh, that's great.
All right, David, let's do the Overword Twitter joke of the week, where we celebrate a gag that was so obvious that all of media Twitter made it at exactly the same time. Send nominees to @thepressboxpod, where they are always, always gratefully received. David, we got a tweet from an account called Design Boom.
Sounds like an account I would follow. Go on.
Yeah, Design Boom writes, future homeowners in France are now looking into straw houses. Future homeowners in France are looking into straw houses. It was an overworked Twitter joke to write, did a big bad wolf write this? Thank you, Patrick Foe, for that. A weird but probably inevitable sight during Game 4 of the World Series, David. Donald Trump was at the stadium doing the reviled tomahawk chop with Atlanta Braves fans. There is video for this. It was an overworked Twitter joke to write, Trump is at the World Series so he can finally see what it takes to win in Georgia. Thanks to Brian Forshall for that one. And this week's runaway winner, David, Facebook has changed its company name to Meta.
Yeah.
Meta. It was an overworked Twitter joke to write, Ron Artest already did this, and he didn't destroy democracy first. Thanks to a whole bunch of people, including Mario, Andretti, Bizo, Michael T., Andrew, CL Podgang, John King, I'm going to have to take a deep breath here, Elliot Bowers, El Horse, Jake Tuber, not Chester Lemon, Dr. Bobbert, Matthew Shaw, Charles Pryor III, Jesse Moose, and Terry McDonald. If you made a good joke about Mark Zuckerberg that didn't just rehash stuff in the social network, congrats. You made the overworked Twitter joke of the week.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
All right, David, let us continue with listener mail from our good friend and fellow podcaster, Joseph Bean Khan. It's hard to picture an athlete more in need of an access-heavy profile to reframe his public image than Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons, of course, of the 76ers. If you could fantasy book any sports journalist in history to write it, who would you pick? Can I give you some fantasy booking Ben Simmons profiles here?
Oh, yeah, please, please.
So 50 years ago, this were all happening 50 years ago, my pick, Gay Talese for Esquire. Mm-hmm. No brainer. 30 to 35 years ago, Gary Smith for Sports Illustrated. 20 years ago, Dan Lebatard for ESPN the magazine. Remember those profiles Dan Lebatard wrote for ESPN?
Mm-hmm.
You don't understand the athlete. Here's the way the athlete really is. This Ben Simmons would be a perfect one. And if we're fantasy booking this now, Pablo Torre, who has written a lot about the 76ers process, only it would be a podcast. That would be the current iteration.
Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, there's a lot of people that could do that really well. Our old buddy Tyler Tynes is just tearing it up at GQ right now and seems to be just like absolutely demolishing everything that's put in front of him. I would not put that. I would put his name on the list.
Can I give you my outside the box pick?
Yeah.
Philly plus that kind of particular profile plus sports.
Mm-hmm.
Buzz Bissinger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd read that. I think that might be it for non-obvious choices anyway. This one is from Seth Sommerfeld, David. Do you think the subplot of the Braves chant being problematic would be at least mentioned on the broadcast if Fox wasn't the network, or does MLB just have tighter control on its broadcast? I feel like bad stories in other sports are at least brought up even during the Super Bowl. Seth continues, all other bad stories aren't literally constant background noise. It's unavoidable during three games of the series. It's not like you could hear the sound of a deflating football during Patriots games. So I think that is exactly the point here. There is this chant and chop in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Fox, I have not watched every minute of the World Series, I'm going to be honest, so maybe Fox has mentioned it. But the complication here is that is the soundtrack of all the games in Atlanta when you watch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is going on. And by the way, I'm sure the network 20 years ago, 30 years ago, thought before they got religion, thought that was really great.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Look at this ambiance. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. So how do you address something and then have it be over your air for the next 3 hours? Because I think somebody could ask, well, this is so terrible. Why are we just hearing this for the entire game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a weird situation. I mean, they're not playing it or encouraging it over the loudspeaker at this point, right? This is just a totally organic, vesicle organ of fandom past.
I'm not sure on the loudspeaker part, to be honest.
Because it seems like a playoff run. I mean, it wouldn't be necessarily a popular decision, but it seems like a playoff run like this might have been a good opportunity to start trying to get rid of it, mm-hmm. right? To sort of say like, hey, since we're all together and we're all in a good mood, let's maybe try something else together and start new traditions.
But that's when they lean into the bad thing.
Yeah, I know, but the excuse at the beginning of the next season is going to be, well, then no one's going to come to the games anymore, or whatever. Now they kind of have your fans sort of, you know, stuck. Like they're gonna keep rooting for their team, even if they say, you tell them they have to cheer a different way. But anyway, it's really tough. I'm sure there's a historical parallel to this, right? That I can't even think of, but. I mean, in pro wrestling, you know, they'll air chants that are just like sometimes full of profanity, and the announcers have to be like, don't listen to them, like, whatever. I mean, it's, you know, just try to redirect your eyes somewhere else or your ears somewhere else. But yeah, it's tough. It's a unfortunate situation. What are you going to do? Can you just mute it out? I mean, is that
No, but you can't mute the whole crowd. I don't think that's possible. You could certainly turn it down. Right. Turn down your crowd mics, mm-hmm. and sort of, you know, make your announcers a larger part of the audio feed. But I don't think it's possible to just drown it out completely.
Well, I mean, you know, this is Atlanta. Speaking of pro wrestling, you remember back in the day when Goldberg was getting big and they would just pipe in Goldberg chants to the entire arena whenever he would come down, just like he was huge. But they really pushed it even further that they should just play some other chant as loud as they can through the arena whenever the chants start.
Looks like the Braves during the 2019 playoffs, according to USA Today, responded by not giving out foam tomahawks to fans during the series with the Cardinals and not playing the chant over the loudspeaker. Atlanta's season ended with a loss to St. Louis, but the chop has returned to the ballpark since. So there you go there. Wanted to flag a book for you, David, that's out tomorrow. It is called Woke Up This Morning, The Definitive Oral History of the Sopranos. It's by the hosts of the Talking Sopranos podcast who were also in the show, The Sopranos. Now, I believe this book contains like every force in modern media right now. Just count them off with me. Oral history.
Mm-hmm.
A definitive oral history. Kind of an acknowledgement that there are lots of oral histories of The Sopranos, including an excellent one by Alan Siegel over at The Ringer. It's the hosts of a podcast writing the book.
Mm-hmm.
People who were in the show, so it's kind of the people that we used to write about and who used the media used to use as a subject, now making their own media. It is also episode recaps, rewatch content. So what have I missed there? I mean, doesn't that feel like that is everything that is currently happening in media is now happening within this book?
I'm sorry, I didn't get to read the flap copy. Is anyone or any of the contributors to this oral history breaking their silence on the on what happened during this?
I believe David Chase has broken his silence so many times that they did not even go with the ceremonial breaking of silence here.
Oh man, I mean, yeah. I mean, this is just a modern media bingo card.
There's also a ghostwriter, a third writer. Did I add that part?
Oh, he's not a ghostwriter. His name's on the front, but presumably he's the only one writing and the other two guys aren't. So I guess he's ghosty in that sense.
also that person. That's another, let's add that to the whole list here.
Oh man. I'm enthralled by this. I need to know more. Is this just podcast excerpts turned into a book? Or is this a totally new reporting job?
I have no idea. Honestly, have no idea. And I'm not going to have an idea. If you like The Sopranos, you go for it. I'm glad you brought up Breaking of Silence because listener Seku has an interesting one for us, David. Huma Abedin, former Hillary Clinton aide, longtime Hillary Clinton aide, former wife of Anthony Weiner, has a new memoir out this week. And Seku asks, is this the rare legitimate breaking of silence? The stuff in this book is really interesting, right? Like we this is somebody who has not spoken a ton and who we do want to hear more from potentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it legit? Yeah. I think this is legitimate. I mean, yeah. Yeah. I feel like if you've been holding something in for that long, you're never really given the interview. And yes, we all want to hear about it. Then sure. That's
just silence. Some. It's not never talked, but it's something of a breaking of silence.
Yeah, this might be the one legitimate one. I'm sure there's other ones, but this feels, I'm skeptical of any of all of them. And this feels, legitimate.
It's not Thomas Pynchon giving an interview.
I get so my vision is blurred by motives, right? Because what I said before, it's like you kind of have to like have the receipts. You got to show the email that you sent to Huma like every 6 months to say, are you ready to break the silence yet? And then when she says yes, that feels like a real formal breaking of the silence. But I don't know why she did. I don't know if she did. She promote? Is she doing something else, or is she just out here like just talking about this one thing?
I don't know. I don't know
if she. Yeah, well, if her motives are pure, then I'll give her the breaking of the silence designation for sure.
It's time for David Shoemaker guesses a strain pun headline.
Yeah.
Last Monday's headline about a musician who was allowed to play in one of the city's public spaces was consensual sax. This week's headline is from Nate Bowling. It's from Newsday. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell died last month, David. Mm-hmm. And one of the really interesting counter histories, which I wanted to read more about, was the what if Colin Powell had run for president in 1996 as a Republican, which he thought about doing. He had a lot of issue positions that were out of step with the Republican Party as it was constituted in 1996, but he did lead Bill Clinton in several polls.
Mm-hmm.
So what if he had taken that popularity and run for president? Well, Newsday did a story about Powell's deliberations at the time, particularly as they concerned his wife Alma's opinion about whether he should run for president. So Alma was very key in this decision. What was Newsday's strained pun headline?
Alma, I mean, is this like an alma mater pun or like Alma, Alma Matters? Alma,
no, we're done here, folks.
Is that it?
Alma Matters.
Is that really it?
That's it.
You're
done.
Believe. Yeah.
You did 45 seconds worth of work in 5 seconds.
Wow. Well, I feel good about it. I also kind of feel like it's a, that's maybe not the best headline. As partial as I am to puns, I don't know if that really gets to the heart of like a, but I guess they ran it in 95.
95, 96.
I mean, that really just assumes an incredible amount of familiarity with Colin Powell and his wife. But, if he's pulling that well, then maybe that works.
Should we look up the desk editor from Newsday in the mid-90s?
Get him on the show.
David's got some issues with your headline choice. He is David Shoemaker. I'm Brian Curtis. Production magic by Isaiah Blakely. Coming this Friday, David, another how-to podcast. This is how to be a newspaper sports columnist with the Los Angeles Times' Bill Plaschke. Then Shoemaker and I are back Monday with more lukewarm takes about the media. See you then, David.
See you later, Ryan.